It was a beautiful send-off. I haven't heard that song in a while and very much enjoyed singing it with you. It is a blessing to be here this morning, to be here with so many and to sing and praise God the way we've just done it, to be able to enjoy Bible class and to study His Word as we're going to continue to do now. And I got to tell you, it's always a humbling experience to see the crowd from this angle, to see how many we get to worship with, how many we're able to praise God with. It is a true blessing. And for those who are visiting with us, we are so thankful that you're here. And we just open our arms to welcome you and hope you felt welcome. And if there is anything that we can do for you in getting to know us a little bit better, just please ask any one of us. This is such a wonderful, friendly congregation. We just love to get to know visitors and talk to them and answer any questions. And we're just, again, so thankful to have you. And on a personal note, it's been wonderful to have a visitor of my own. My sister's been in town, as some of you have known. Been here for the past couple weeks after my parents have visited. And it's been great to have her, but she's just been so encouraged and thankful for so many here, for the hospitality, for the warmth, for the love. And when she's made comments about that, it's been no surprise to me because just the hospitality and warmth that I've received, as well as so many of us, it's just incredible, and it never ceases to amaze me and impress me, but it didn't surprise me in her case. And so she's really enjoyed her time here, and we thank you all for that. And you know, it hasn't been that bad having her around from my standpoint, getting to come home and have some cooked meals and maybe a little bit of laundry done. It's been wonderful. She's a good cook too. So really enjoyed having her though, and it's just wonderful to have family, and especially spiritual family. If you would open your Bibles this morning to 2 Samuel chapter 23. You know, so much of God's Word is just simply fascinating. There are stories that stretch the imagination of what is possible and sometimes just leave us with our jaws dropped almost in amazement. And however, all these stories aren't meant merely to entertain and to astound, but they're meant to teach some important lessons. And we're fortunate that God presents so much of His wisdom, so much truth, in something that both intrigues us and captivates us. And today, this morning, is a similar case. This morning, I'd like to examine the portrayal of David's mighty men. And again, this is a passage that I find so awe-inspiring, and yet at the same time, it's one that conceals some important lessons for the Christian. Let's go ahead and begin reading in verse 8. 2 Samuel 23, starting in verse 8. These are the names of the mighty men whom David had: Bathsheba, a Talmonite, chief of all captains. He was called Adonai the Eznite because of 800 slain by him at one time. And after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo the Ahohite. You can imagine some of these people got made fun of their names maybe in their time. One of the three mighty men with David when they defied the Philistines who were gathered there to battle, and the men of Israel had withdrawn, he arose and struck the Philistines until his hand was weary and clung to the sword. And the Lord brought about a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to strip the slain. Now after him was Shammah, the son of Agi, a Hararite, and the Philistines were gathered into a troop, where there was a plot of ground full of lentils. And the people fled from the Philistines, but he took his stand in the midst of the plot, defended it, and struck the Philistines, and the Lord brought about a great victory. Then three of the 30 chief men went down and came to David in the harvest time to the cave of Adullam, while the troop of the Philistines were camping in the valley of Rephaim. David was then in the stronghold, while the garrison of the Philistines was then in Bethlehem. David had a craving and said, "Oh, that someone would give me water to drink from the well of Bethlehem, which is by the gate." So the three mighty men broke through the camp of the Philistines and drew water from the well of Bethlehem, which was by the gate, and took it and brought it to David. Nevertheless, he would not drink it, but poured it out to the Lord. And he said, "Be it far from me, O Lord, that I should do this. Shall I drink the blood of the men who went in jeopardy of their lives?" Therefore, he would not drink it. These things the three men did. Abishai, the brother of Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was chief of the 30. He swung his spear against 300 and killed them, and had a name as well as the three. He was most honored of the 30. Therefore, he became their commander. However, he did not attain to the three. Then Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done mighty deeds, killed the two sons of Ariel of Moab. He also went down and killed a lion in the middle of a pit on a snowy day. He killed an Egyptian, an impressive man. Now the Egyptian had a spear in his hand, but he went down to him with a club and snatched the spear from the Egyptian's hand and killed him with his own spear. These things Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, did, and had a name as well as the three mighty men. He was honored among the 30, but he did not attain to the three. David appointed him over his guard. Azahel, the brother of Joab, was among the 30. Elhanan, the son of Dodo of Bethlehem, and then he's going to continue with all these names. Again, from Joab, the son of Joab, Azahel, Elhanan, and then all the way down in verse 39, you'll read of Uriah the Hittite. It says 37 in all. You know, 2 Samuel 23 provides some of the most heroic and impressive warriors in the history of the Bible, but not even just the Bible, but of all human history. These feats that they accomplish, the victories that they have, are more than most men in their entire lives will accomplish. They accomplish it one time. And let's look at how impressive some of these men are. We just read about Josheb-Bathsheba. But before that, I want you to consider something. You think about some of the great warriors of our lifetimes. Some of you might have heard of Audie Murphy. And if you haven't, perhaps you should have. He was a Texan, but not only was he a Texan, but he was a highly honored American war hero. During his career, during the World War II, he was accredited with destroying 6 tanks, and in addition to killing over 240 Germans, and not only that, but wounding and capturing many others. And there's a biographical excerpt that I'd like to read that just talks about one instance of his military career. In one battle in Holzwehr, France, Murphy's unit was reduced to an effective strength of 19, in which it started of 128. Murphy sent all of the remaining men to the rear while he shot at the Germans until he ran out of ammunition. And then he climbed aboard an abandoned burning tank destroyer and used its 50 caliber machine gun to cut down the German infantry, including one full squad of German infantry who crawled into a ditch within 100 feet of his position. And he was able to call in artillery fire using a land telephone, and under heavy fire was wounded in the leg. He nonetheless continued his nearly single-handed battle for almost an hour. He only stopped fighting when his telephone line to the artillery was cut by enemy artillery. And as his remaining men moved forward, he quickly organized them into a counterattack, which ultimately drove the enemy from Holzwehr. For these actions, Murphy was awarded the Medal of Honor. Audie Murphy ended up being the most highly decorated soldier in U.S. history, and is honored among many. But as incredible his feats are, they are beat just in a sentence by Joshua. We just read These are the names of the mighty men of David that he had: Josheph, Basabeth, Talcamite, and he was the chief of the three. In verse 8, it says he wielded his spear against 800, whom he killed at one time. You know, if these guys were in a conversation about their military careers and were trying to one-up each other, it would end really quickly. And as this man would give this long discourse and paragraph, he beats him in a sentence. 800 men. More than what most people would do in their entire lives. And he does it in just a single battle, in one instance. And you consider these numbers of some of these men. Let me remind you that he's not fighting with a 50 caliber machine gun. He doesn't even have a pistol, but he's fighting with a spear. This is hand-to-hand combat, and in one battle, 800 men drop. And this would have been something that was devastating and incredible to witness. And the next you have Abishai, another mighty man who brings about a bloody mass. He kills 300 with his spear and was given honor as an officer among David's men. And again, this happens in one single occasion. 300 men drop. We read about Audie Murphy and the Medal of Honor that he was given, but we also said that he was the most highly decorated man in U.S. history. And if you were to look up his medals, I mean, it would just cover a page. Endless awards and honors that are given to him. And I think about if Abishai was in this time, what kind of honors he had. It says that he was highly honored. I wonder how many different medals and awards and trophies he would have received, and perhaps they would have to even make medals in his name, make up new honors for him. And in another battle, we witness a man named Eleazar, who stood his ground against the Philistines while his own men retreated. He continued slaughtering the enemy until he was so exhausted that his hand seemed stuck to the sword. I just can't imagine that. You know, someone who's just tirelessly in battle against his enemy, that he has such a death grip, and you can just imagine him at the end of the battle with blood and sweat, his hand just stuck to the sword, and he's just so exhausted that he just has to pry his fingers off of the handle. I mean, these are incredible feats. Again, something that would be so incredible to witness. You know, I like action movies, and I'm a little bit of a kung fu martial arts fan, and I'll see one of those flicks every now and then. And I remember seeing Jackie Chan do work in one of his movies where he takes on, a mass, and you just think, man, he's outnumbered. There's no way this is going to happen. There's got to be 20, 30 people. And he ends up fighting them all and ends up taking a pole and is battling them. And then he even takes a ladder and he starts swinging that around. And it's just entertaining and exciting. And at the end of it, you know, Jackie Chan, he's just out of breath because he's fought all these people. I can't imagine what I would feel like after fighting 800 men who actually are left on the floor, to just see the piles of people scattered abroad. And, you know, you think Hollywood, if they were smart, they would take some of these biblical stories and turn them into some movies. I mean, this is entertaining, incredible, unbelievable stuff. And again, these things are almost inconceivable. Not only are they impressive, but it's just hard to believe. It's so incredible what these men do. And that just is a testament to how incredible it is. But it's important to note, as these men are doing such incredible feats, the glory is given to God. The battle has been fought by the Lord. As we see a couple different times in verse 10 and verse 12, God has given the honor and the credit for these victories. And, you know, I don't care how big, strong, fast, coordinated you are, you aren't going to kill 800 men without the Lord. And if you think you are, I'm not telling you to prove it, but I don't really believe you. I'm sorry. But it just shows you that when God's on your side, the odds are of no consequence. I mean, you think of Gideon, his 300 men against the mass that he fights. You know, one man plus God equals a majority. You're going to outnumber any foe. But I want you to understand that not only are these things that are accomplished impressive, not only are David's mighty men astounding, but their allegiance is also incredible and moving even. You look in 2 Samuel chapter 23, verses 13 through 17 that we just did, and we see this occasion where three of David's elite men break through a stronghold of Philistine soldiers that had camped near a well just to bring David a cup of water. He was craving of thirst. He tells the men, they say, "We'll take care of it." And they go and slaughter men for their king, for their master. And then what's wild about the situation is, to the men's, probably to their shock, David pours it out. I mean, you see the allegiance right back from David. And I can just almost picture the horror on their face as he's pouring it out, to think, okay, I just killed all these men and you're pouring this out? You've got to be kidding me. At least maybe give me a drink. I'm kind of thirsty from killing all these men. But again, you know, the whole point was David appreciated their allegiance. And can you imagine leading such men? Leading men that would die for you over thirst, that are that faithful and care that much. I just can't imagine how easy it would have been to have confidence as you led such troops. And not only does David claim allegiance from his men, from the men of his country that he's picked up, that he's fought in battle with, but what's incredible is that he has allegiance from men of different nations. Some of these men listed in verses 24 through 39, we didn't read them all, but they're Gentiles. These are pagan people, and they have allegiance to him. One of the ones we know most well is Uriah. Remember, Uriah is a Hittite. And think about what he does for David. You think about the fact that when he's in battle, he's a man that won't be pampered as he comes home. He's not going to rest. He's not going to go and enjoy time with his beautiful wife. But he's concerned about his people. He has such allegiance that he even is faithful when he's betrayed. He valiantly emerges into the head of the lines. And you can just imagine, I mean, this is a man as of much courage as any other of these men we've talked about, who dies for his king, who put him in that position. And again, this man is a foreigner. But another striking observation from this text is that David's mighty men and their accomplishments are reminiscent of himself. They're a reflection of what he's done and the achievements that he's made. You think about Benaiah, who kills a lion on a snowy day. I love that line. It's just beautiful, almost poetic. But you remember that it reflects David, who is also a lion killer. We see in that story as he fights Goliath. He comes to Saul and says, I've killed both lion and bear. Send me in. He too had killed lions. But not only that, we have an account from Benaiah, who killed an impressive-looking Philistine with his own spear. This probably reminds you of that situation with Goliath. He kills an impressive, Philistine with his own sword. He goes and cuts off his head, and his sword is end up placed in a temple or palace. But also, you think about these masses of numbers that these different men kill. Again, something that David himself was known for. We read in 1 Samuel 18, as people are ridiculing and singing about Saul, "Saul has struck down his thousands and David his tens of thousands." And in that very same chapter, as Saul is trying to put David into trouble and get him killed, in verse 27 it says, "In order to receive Saul's daughter Michal, his wife, as his wife, David is asked to present a bride price of 100
foreskins of Philistines. And then you see that what he does, he goes out and he kills 200. I mean, this is no problem for David. He's also killed his masses. And in 2 Samuel 8, we're going to have a list of the different victories that David has had. And he's also similar to these mighty men in that victory is given to the Lord. The Lord is the one who's provided these things, and the credit is due him. In verse 14, 2 Samuel 8, and the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. Like Uriah, one last similarity, he was faithful to those who tried to betray him. You think about David and his allegiance to Saul, how even when he was after his own life, he was faithful. Uriah goes in the battle faithful, and even to his point, to his death. And so for an application of all this, what do we make of this list of mighty men? You know, I alluded at the in the middle of this lesson that, can you imagine leading such men? Can you imagine having the confidence of men who would die for you, who've done so much? We talked about the fact that he has 37 of these mighty men, and you think about what it was or what it meant to be held up in this group. It seems like the standards are pretty high. You either had to kill a ton of people, you had to kill something impressive like a freak of nature or some kind of giant or a big animal, or you just did something incredibly courageous. You either stand alone and fight, or you kill a bunch of people in order to give your master a drink or whatever else. I mean, these are some incredible warriors. And they were loyal. From all places, in every means, even when they aren't loyal back. And again, you know, this basically was his own story. It's no surprise that these are David's mighty men. David himself definitely qualified, and qualified as the leader. And yet, look at what happens in the very next chapter. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 24, starting in verses 1 through 10. Again, the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, "Go, number Israel and Judah." So the king said to Joab, the commander of the army who was with him, "Now go throughout all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and count the people that I may know the number of the people." And Joab said to the king, "Now may the Lord your God add to the people 100 times more than they are, and may the eyes of the Lord, of my lord the king, see it. But why does my lord the king desire this thing?" Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the army. Therefore, Joab and the captains of the army went out from the presence of the king to count the people of Israel. And I remember Jeff talking about this passage, and he says, you know, if Joab, if you know who Joab is, if he's telling you this is something's a bad idea, a man who's done so much wrong, you better pay attention. It must be really awful if Joab is cautioning you not to go against the Lord. But skip down into verse 9. Then Joab gave the sum of the number of the people to the king, and there were in Israel 800,000 valiant men who drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. And King David's heart condemned him after he had numbered the people. So David said to the Lord, "I have sinned greatly in what I have done. But now I pray, O Lord, take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly." 1 Chronicles chapter 21, verse 1 explains that this was likely a human enemy, probably a nearby nation, which rose up and was opposing Israel. And as a result, David feels this pressure to number his people so that he could assess his military strength. And simply put, David doesn't trust God. He caves under pressure. He forgets about all the things that God had done for him. And despite his great army, despite these mighty men, despite the victories he had, and even the warning of Joab and of all the people, he doesn't trust God. And this is the application. Will we? You know, we've had some rough times in our lives. We go through difficulty. And will we open our eyes to see what God has done for us in our lives when these times come? Will we trust in him and know that he will deliver us as he has in times past? And you think about the mighty men that we've had in our lives. You think about the valiant warriors that we have in our families, that we have in the elders of this church, that we have in the deacons, the parents, the brothers, the sisters. You know, all these different facets that God has given us. And you think about the allegiance that we have. And if you're doubtful of that, I hope you understand that this congregation cares so much about it, about each other, the love they have for you, whether you know it or not. If you would let it be known, if you're in that kind of trouble, we will be there for you. I guarantee you. We will rise to the occasion. We will stand there with you, whatever you're going through. We want you to succeed. And you think about the victories that you've even had in your own lives. I mean, we don't have to slay 1,000 men or 800 or 200 or 1. But God has done some impressive things in our lives. Have we forgotten that? I mean, if you are sitting in this pew right now, God has delivered you. We're here in a safe, comfortable building around people that are worshiping God, listening to the words of God. We've been delivered time and time again. I hope you understand that. And I'm not going to make the application. You yourself can think and consider and remember. And with all these things, well, we don't have any excuse not to trust. Whatever we're going through, we need to know, we need to have confidence that God is going to deliver us. And the unfortunate fact is, if we don't, then that worst nightmare that we fear so much, it may come into fruition. You know, David feared defeat. And you see what happens at the end of the story. He's cursed by God. 70,000 men die. The application is simple. If you haven't trusted in God, if you haven't had your confidence in him, then I hope and pray that you do now. And if we can pray for you and with you, if we can be of any service, we would love to do that. But we need to consider these different things, these different facets, how wonderful God has blessed us. And maybe you haven't trusted God to the point where you've given yourself to him through baptism. You need to do that. To be baptized into Christ, to become a child of his, to make that commitment, to have that trust, that is something that God requires. And it's something that we should show. We should want to show. God has done so much for us. And God will continue to do so much more if we will only trust in him. If we can help you in any way, if we can baptize you at this time, we would love to do so if you would come forward.